It's time. Time for stimulating talk. Time for thought-provoking conversation. Time for the Lisa Wexler Show on WICC 600. Turn on your brain and get the real scoop on today's topics and events. Here is Lisa Wexler.
Good morning, and Lisa Wexler has the day off. This is Ann Carrick. I am in today for the Lisa Wexler Show. And let me just give you a little preview of what's coming up. I have Elizabeth in studio with me, and we're going to have a real talk about what it's like to go through breast cancer treatments before the pink tsunami hits in October, which I'm referring to Breast Cancer Awareness Month, where you'll hear lots of information about awareness and early detection and all sorts of things, all good, as you know, as well as research to try to cure cancer. But today we're going to talk to Elizabeth about what it's really like and how it impacts your life. In the next hour, we will also check in with Jenny Van Leeuwen-Harrington from Gilman Hill Asset Management. She's going to give us some insights into the markets and how they might be reacting due to the recent attacks on oil in Saudi Arabia, as well as some other things you might want to know as far as managing your money with a volatile market, and also how to, you know, de-stress with all those crazy headlines that might make you wonder about your investments. And last but not least, Ellen Morehouse will be here. She is with Represent Us, or represent.us. And if you haven't seen it, there's a great video out there. Jennifer Lawrence, the actress, is the one who voices it or hosts it. And we have some clips from that, but we're going to talk about that. It's all aimed at getting rid of the corruption in our current government system and how we can do that by working from the state level up to the federal level. So that's what's on tap for today. Hope you got your brains tuned in. As Lisa, I know, likes to challenge you, we're going to do the same. So first, let's say good morning to Elizabeth.
Good morning.
Nice to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Great to have you here. And thank you for agreeing to talk about it because, you know, obviously with HIPAA laws, you know, nobody has to talk about their medical situation ever.
That's right.
So thanks for being I was going to say an open book, but we won't go that far. Maybe not like anything is on the table, but, you know, but for agreeing to be here. So let's start with the basics. You were diagnosed with triple negative breast cancer. When was that?
November 27th of last year.
So we're coming up to the one-year mark.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And for people who don't know, triple negative means that the three most common types of receptors that are thought to fuel breast cancer growth, which are estrogen, progesterone, and the HER2 gene, none of those are present in triple negative, hence the name. And it's only about 15% of the people.
Right.
Is that kind of the same information that you were told?
Absolutely correct. Exactly the same.
Okay. So let's just start at the beginning. You had no symptoms, felt fine.
Yes.
Life was wonderful.
Yes, it was good, as good as our lives can be.
Right.
And I have no history at all.
No family history.
No family history.
Okay.
So it was quite a surprise, to say the least.
So this was found during a normal annual screening.
Yes, and although I had a mammogram, I'm also, I think now, lucky enough to get an ultrasound because the mammogram did not see the tumor.
So if you'd done mammogram only, you right. would not have seen anything.
Right. I was told that they might have questioned a blip, but it was so marginal that I'm lucky to have had the ultrasound, which ultimately saw the tumor.
Right. And you had an ultrasound
because
always?
Yes, always. Since I was 42, maybe like after baseline was 40, so probably 41, 42, because of density.
Okay.
And I do
so
know...
So dense tissue, and people are supposed to have ultrasounds
exactly.
if they have dense tissue.
Okay. So once they say that to you, once you're quote-unquote diagnosed with dense tissue.
Labeled,
yes. That's a norm for you going forward.
So that becomes part of your normal
Absolutely.
Annual routine
right.
is mammogram and ultrasound.
Correct.
So
Correct.
You still do both. It's not like you replace one for the other.
Correct.
Okay. So you went for the mammogram, the blip, which who knows if anybody would have caught it. You go for the ultrasound, and what do they see?
So triple negative also is a basal tumor, which just it's within the ducts, and they and it has a weird shape. So it's also part of the what they're looking at. And they said that in that ultrasound, they thought they saw something, but they wanted a surgeon to confirm that. So that was the next step. And unfortunately, I did get in a couple days later for a surgeon to look at it.
So is that, you say a surgeon for a biopsy?
Yeah, well, actually, it's pre-biopsy, looking at the x-ray that came from...
I see what you mean. Yeah, meeting with the surgeon, not surgery itself, but meeting with the surgeon to look at the pictures.
Right, so we're just looking at the pictures on the 14th of November, and he is quite certain, after 25 years of experience, that we're looking at cancer. So even though I wasn't, it took 2 weeks for the biopsy and for the results to come back, which needless to say is always the hardest part is waiting, right?
Right.
Which we all have to do sometime in life, if not many times.
Exactly.
So that was definitely...
But you kind of were expecting
I was,
the
and
answer
I'm very
you got.
Grateful for him doing that. You know, some people say, and we hear these things about not screening because there's the possibility of them telling you you have something you do don't, that it's a negative.
A false positive or negative reading.
But in this case, I was very happy for his experience to give me the option or to be able to think that over a little bit, digest it before we actually got to the biopsy. We did do the biopsy that same day.
A surgical biopsy or a needle biopsy?
It was a needle biopsy.
Okay.
Very strange. Just a weird, you know, kind of sensation and pushing and pulling. I didn't expect it was,
well,
you know,
numb,
we talked about it. You're numb, but it just kind of looking back, it kind of was a kind of felt, archaic in a way, and just you know, just a lot of you didn't feel anything, but just the pressure that he had to put on the device to get the
I assume you're in compression for the biopsy.
No.
Oh, interesting. Because I know a lot
laying
of
back
times
on the table.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
See, that's because a lot of times the person is in compression, meaning they're in like a mammogram type machine, but not as tight.
I had that for the wire device, which we can talk about later. The wire guided, that was compression. But this was actually, he even entered from the opposite side of the tumor.
Oh.
Which I also found very interesting. But of course, at that time, I'm not thinking much of anything. I'm thinking about it now.
Right.
But then.
So you don't know why they came from the opposite side? Maybe.
I don't. I know that he placed a pin in there, and I'm sure that they did it. And that, again, is for us to see. Well, again, I have to back up. The reason why he placed a pin in there was knowing that I'd go through chemo first. As a triple negative patient, no hormonal therapies will work for me.
Right.
So I have friends who are taking 5 years of or HER2 or have, you know, what, these other things we mentioned. But for we triple negative women, none of that will work.
So you have to do chemo.
It's pretty much...
And they do that before they do surgery.
They do. So this is the newer version, if you will. I happen to go to Yale, New Haven, but on Park Avenue right here in Bridgeport, or actually Trumbull Bridgeport line. Lovely. Highly recommend. And that is a more and more accepted practice for us. And there's reasons that I think are very good for that. Number
one,
doing the chemo first. Because some people obviously would say, like we've had friends, just take the breast off, do what you have to do, you know, thinking that physically removing it is the first thing. And
well, I think that's a knee-jerk reaction.
Absolutely.
If you have anytime you have something inside that doesn't belong there, your thought is get it out.
Absolutely.
Remove it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And of course, mine too.
Right.
But when it was explained to me.
I want you to take it out.
Exactly.
Right.
So the explanation from my oncologist was, and I've read since, is the reason why they're doing this for triple negative is to shrink the tumor, for one thing. I was on the border of whether I would do, first of all, mastectomy and lumpectomy were a decision I got to make in the future. So they told me that I could put that off.
So you could mull it over, but it wasn't going to happen right away.
Right. It wasn't going to happen right away. But personally, and I think my doctor thought too, there was a possibility for me to get a lumpectomy, which I was favoring. So from that standpoint, it was a great thing because we're shrinking it. So less of the mass would come out. I wouldn't, right. You know, I mean, it would be a
makes
smaller a mass to come out.
More of a likely choice
exactly
or option.
Right. Exactly right. And it's also killing the cells immediately as well. So,
right.
You know.
You were told that this was very aggressive, very fast.
It is. It's the most aggressive breast cancer there is, or invasive is another thing that they say. But the aggressiveness, and unfortunately with triple negative, we are more likely to have it return or show up in other forms of cancer, particularly the brain and the lung.
Okay.
But, you know, things are especially...
increases the urgency to try
right.
to kill it versus
exactly.
worrying about the one
exactly.
lump that you can see.
Right. So,
or the tumor, yeah.
Exactly. So, whereas we said before, most of us would say, just get it out. Now it was, how quick can you do it? Let's
right.
get to it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they did get me in very quickly with the chemo. So for me, I think it's going to be similar for somebody. I was stage one, by the way. I wanted to say that.
Oh,
I was
right.
very fortunate to be stage one.
So it was
one.
Very early.
Very early, which
but
helps.
But stage one still means that it's invasive.
Yes. And it helps with the fact that it was smaller and also for recurrence.
Oh,
that's
so
a benefit to me.
Well, my general impression is, like, when you talk about the stages, mm-hmm. you know, even if something is sort of stage zero, which sometimes
right.
is called precancerous, depending on who you ask.
Right,
you know,
right.
But the stages don't necessarily alter what kind of treatment you're going to get. It just, it means that it improves the outcome, or the, in other words, it makes the outcome more likely that
right.
it'll work and you'll be fine.
Yes.
You know, so which I think is important for people to understand that, you know, stage one, stage two, stage three, the treatment you're going to get is very similar. It's just that if you're stage one because you caught it early, then it means that the outcome is more likely to be what you want, which
right.
is that you got
correct.
It,
that's my
you killed it, and,
right.
you know, hopefully that's it. You're not going to have something else pop up.
Right, exactly. So for me, just to give a guideline, in my particular instance with triple negative, I had a 20-week regime of chemo.
And do you know if that's considered sort of typical for what you had?
Since I was stage one, I'm willing to bet that yes.
Okay.
I had met another triple negative and it was very similar, yes.
Okay.
And just
so it's not like they were doing something extra because of your situation.
No.
From what you could tell, that was sort of the usual
right.
process
right.
for
chemo first and a big bang
right.
of chemo.
But for triple negative stage one.
Right.
What did you just say, 20 weeks?
20 weeks, but the first four, so that would be 8 weeks. The first 8 weeks, it was every other week.
Okay.
And then it moved to every week for 12.
Right.
That's right.
How fast do you start to feel the side effects when you start chemo?
Well, for me, I'm 50.
Yeah, we are talking about you.
Yes, and I'm 52, so okay. I also want to say that, you know, you're never lucky to get cancer, but I do feel that my age was a good age. I wasn't 30 with young children, and I wasn't in my 70s or 80s and dealing
so
with
your, maybe
more
your
bodily.
Energy level is
yes,
higher.
I think I,
health
you know,
is better.
I think so.
Okay.
But I'd say, you know, the first one I didn't really get too much. I was more waiting for it and thought, okay, that was pretty good. The second one, you know, it's the same with radiation. It's cumulative.
Sure.
So I would say I got through two okay, and then it started to get harder.
And what were the symptoms that you first encountered?
Well, the first two were the gamut. That was because of I can't remember. Taxol is what was given to me. And then I had carboplatin added later. So it was, for me, nausea. They were really watching nausea. I was lucky that I had mild nausea, but I had really bad reflux.
Like acid reflux?
Yes.
Or?
Yes.
Oh.
So I was a little predisposed to that as I got older, but this I had to take a pill every day. But the nice thing was is the nurses ask you every time how you're doing. And there was an easy answer to that. And it helped. I just took a daily, like, Pepcid AC or...
So not something crazy,
not
strong,
something
just
crazy.
Kind of normal.
It was awful when I was having it because
right.
I couldn't tell if it was nausea or if it was... I was like, is this what you mean by nausea? And I don't think so. Some people actually do
right.
vomit, and I was lucky enough to escape that. But for me, it was more a burning sensation, a bad, you know, like heartburn.
Like heartburn.
All the time.
Is it kind of, not to be gross, but is it kind of like, you know, sometimes you feel like... like you almost started to vomit, but it doesn't really come all the way out. You're like, it's kind of that bubble up, and then it goes back down.
So, okay. And burning, like a burning sensation in there.
I think that is acid reflux.
Yes.
Since I did not go to medical school, I'm not sure. That's the actual term for it.
That's what we called it anyway, and that's what they treated for. So for me, it was that. And then, of course, there's sleep issues, not sleeping, sleeping when you can. The unfortunate thing is you do take hormones right before you go through and for 3 days after, day 2, 3, and 4, and they keep you up.
So they give you what kind of hormones?
I have forgotten the name of the pill because I haven't taken it in so long. Right. But it was for nausea.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, what was its intended purpose?
Right.
It was to help with the nausea.
Right,
okay.
Which is what I found to be a little frustrating, and I'm sure they've heard over and over, is, you know, you're taking one thing to help one issue,
and
in this case, nausea, and it created sleeplessness. So, so you know, balancing that, figuring out if you needed additional pills, which we were also, or I was also given for nausea.
Okay, so you know, we're going to take a quick break here. In case you're wondering, this is the Lisa Wexler Show. I'm Ann Carrick. I'm in for her today. She has the day off. And we're talking to Elizabeth, who has been going through, and I think you're almost done, right?
I'm done. Yeah.
Oh, you are done.
Two weeks.
But been going through treatment for breast cancer. And so we're just giving you a up-close personal look at what it's really like. If you have questions or comments, you're, of course, welcome to call in. It's 203-333-9422. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back and talk more to Elizabeth. Welcome back. Ann Carrick in for Lisa. She has the day off. And we're talking to Elizabeth here in studio, who has finished her cancer treatment, but she was diagnosed in November last year with triple negative breast cancer. So we're talking about what it's really like to go through cancer treatments before what I call the pink tsunami arrives in October, which they'll talk a lot, of course, about awareness and early detection and screening and research, and that is all very useful. But I thought, let's talk about what it's really like. So you were talking about the chemotherapy, how the chemicals they're giving you to kill the cancer are causing acid reflux or nausea. So then they gave you hormones to counterbalance the nausea, but that caused sleeplessness.
Yes.
So, and then off the air, you were just saying that the nurses, though, were great, that they knew everything, because of course this is what they do every day, so they asked you all the time what your symptoms were and had lots of good suggestions for you to try to manage them, because 20 weeks, you know, that's a long time to be feeling sick or having different symptoms from all this. And I would imagine as they changed which chemicals you were getting, your symptoms, did they change to some extent as well, or did they stay sort of the same?
That's an interesting question. My chemicals didn't change so much. We did add later in something that made it a little more difficult, a little more challenging, because they had their own side effects. It had its own side effects. But I would say it was management. It was learning what my body did the last time, altering for that, and then something else might have come for the next time.
Right.
But the nurses always ask how you're doing, and I highly recommend to anybody who's going to go through this, tell them, because they know all the tricks. They know, and they want to. They want to make this journey as easy, quote unquote, as possible for you.
Well, and so I think what you're saying in different words is, don't feel like you're complaining.
Absolutely,
because you're telling them the symptoms. They want to know because they know how to fix them.
Absolutely.
Or they at least have ideas what might work for you.
Yes, they absolutely do.
So your first round, you said, was every other week.
Mm-hmm. That was for 4 rounds and 8 weeks.
And 8 weeks. Mm-hmm. And then what?
And then I was weekly.
Oh, weekly. Okay, so it became more frequent.
Yes. So in some ways, I think they gave more recovery time in the first part because it was needed. So in one sense, you know, but it came, you know, come week six, it was hard to have that week go so quickly.
Right.
You know, I missed the 2 weeks because it seemed to me that I had 4 bad days and 2 good days, and then I was back in.
Okay. And then so you had the symptoms, the nausea, the acid reflux, we're calling it. I know you ended up losing your hair.
Mm-hmm.
When did that kick in?
My eyelashes and my eyebrows, which were even worse.
Yes.
I mean, that was actually, you know, we focused so much on the hair, but that's another thing I'd like to get across to patients and also people who are supporting those patients, friends and family. Losing my eyebrows was way worse. And I think because I'm gray, I'm early gray. It seemed I was so bland. To me, I really looked sick at that point. I could deal with the hair and putting a scarf on, but once I lost my eyelashes and eyebrows, there was no escaping that I looked like a cancer patient.
Well, and I would imagine it doesn't sound like you chose that route, but you could have bought a wig.
I could
but
have.
That would not have fixed your eyebrows and your eyelashes either.
Exactly.
And
I guess
if you really, I don't know if you did, but eyelashes, they have false eyelashes you could put on, but eyebrows, I don't think they have
eyebrows.
Well,
yeah, you dry them in. And of course, you know, when they're growing back, I did that too. But, you know, just for women and the men who love them, that was really a kick that I didn't expect.
The eyebrows.
You know, we talked about that and that, the eyebrows and the eyelashes. And I think because mine are long and dark, that it took away, whereas the hair wasn't as much of a deal to me. I can't explain that more than maybe the color, because they're darker.
Well, I was going to say, your eyebrows and your eyelashes, they really define your eyes.
They do.
You know, whereas people change hairstyles, you know.
Right.
I think you had short hair to begin with.
Right,
I did. Having maybe no hair wasn't as dramatic.
Exactly.
I mean,
it would be for a longer haired person.
It's
for
dramatic,
sure, but
you know what I'm saying? It's like you were kind of used to having the shortcut look.
Yeah.
So for it to be gone is close to what it looked like as opposed to eyebrows and eyelashes.
Right,
just,
right.
Now your eyes look completely different.
Yes.
And
so for me, that happened, I think it was about the sixth week, the hair first and then the eyebrows and eyelashes the next week or so.
Right. And is part of what they offered, you know, like how to make yourself look and feel better during that or not? Or do they worry about that later, sort of? Like, do they give you hints on how to draw eyebrows in?
You can find them. I mean, I did that kind of on my own online, and there are lots of support. There's lots of support on there. There's actually one site that's devoted to that, to making you feel better while you're in cancer.
Okay.
And there's a group that used to travel to Yale New Haven that hasn't been lately, and I don't understand why they're out of Massachusetts, and they're all about that too. So you can find things online. And of course, now I also want to make a plug that now drawing in your eyebrows for young girls is very fashionable. So
it's a style statement.
Yes, it is. So we have that too.
Okay.
Whereas, you know.
So the rest of the chemo, kind of more of the same.
Yeah.
And then after you finished the chemo, then what came next?
The most exciting part was ringing the bell.
Oh, you were done.
When I was done, yes. It was a little graduation full of music and nurses. Wonderful.
It was actually a big celebration.
Wonderful little celebration.
Okay.
And then they gave me a couple weeks to get through that. And I think it was 2 or 3 weeks. And then surgery was supposed to happen.
To actually remove the tumor.
Mm-hmm. So we did that, and
the tumor was smaller by then.
I was small.
So the chemo
got to have
done
a lumpectomy.
Its job.
Yep, I got to have a lumpectomy. In my particular case, unfortunately, I also developed a very large hematoma. Apparently, it's common when you have a lumpectomy to have a. It's really just a pool of blood similar to a bruise on the inside, which with a lumpectomy they say it's normal to have a size up to a walnut, and then it naturally resorbs. In my case, unfortunately, mine was the size of a tennis ball.
Oops.
And did not resorb. So I had to have a second surgery.
To get rid of the hematoma.
Yes. We gave it a few weeks. I think it was 3 weeks. I was 3 weeks delayed because of that for radiation. So we had to go back and do that again. So that was the second surgery. I also had a port put in too, which
some people
I knew nothing about. Yes, it's right over my collarbone of the opposite side where my tumor was. And that's to deliver the chemo. I don't know what the number is, but if you do more than, let's say this is totally my gas 4 or 6, they will put a port in for you so that your veins aren't used as much, because it is a strong chemical and can cause some burning sensation and hurt your veins, I think, over long term. So that was also another surgery I had to put that in prior.
Right. We're going to take another break in a minute, but I know that I've seen or heard about where there's also something you can put on your head that's supposed to help you prevent losing your hair, but you did not do that.
I did not do that. I looked into it, but I didn't.
And
do
what
that.
Were the basic reasons you chose not
the price
to.
And also in my case, well, it was $1,000.
You have to buy the
rent it. For me at my age, it was a fiasco. They come in frozen coolers with ice, and the nurses don't help you put it on, so you need to have somebody else there to help you get it on. So it's really, it's a cold pack. It's a frozen cold pack.
Kind of.
For your hair. And I think for younger women or women who aren't doing 20 weeks of therapy, it's a great answer.
Because you would have had to wear it every day?
Yes, every time.
Oh, every time you went, but not the days in between.
Right. Okay. Only when you had the chemo done.
Okay.
But for me, you know, evaluating it, especially with the short hair, I'm 52, it just wasn't a priority for me, but I hear that, you know, for some people it does work.
Okay. Yeah. I'm just curious because I knew you had not done that.
Yeah.
So we are going to take a quick break. Just a note I'm seeing on the, you know, a news alert that Cokie Roberts has died. So people who are familiar with, she's a journalist. She's been around for a long time, very well thought of, well known. I know this is not a breaking news show, but I just wanted to mention that if people are listening. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back and talk some more to Elizabeth. And Lisa has the day off. I'm Ann Carrick, and we're talking to Elizabeth, who is finished with her cancer treatment for breast cancer. Just a reminder, WICC 600 is podcasting, so you can catch up on anything you missed, like your favorite WICC 600 shows. You can just search WICC 600 and download, like, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. So it's easy, free, and on demand, all from us, WICC 600. And, of course, you can always call in and join the show with a comment or a question, 203-333-9422. So, Elizabeth, we went to the break. We were talking about, you know, you had the hematoma. You had to go for a second surgery to clear that, which delayed radiation. So let's talk a little bit about radiation for people who don't know. I'm guessing one of the big things they don't ever think about is that it's every single day at the same time of day for however many sessions you have to have.
Correct.
And so how many did you have to have?
I had to have 30.
30. That sounds like a lot.
6 weeks.
Especially when you hear commercials and ads for like prostate cancer where they're like, oh, 5 sessions and you're done.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be nice?
I know. And I did meet people along the way. Maybe we're there for 1 week or two. I think, again, because of the aggressiveness, I know. For breast cancer in general, it's usually a 4-week session now.
Right.
They're doing a boost at the end and doing very well with that. With the triple negative, they wanted to go back to the old standard, if you will, to give me the additional
Did you time. Still have a boost?
I did.
And for people who don't know, a boost means that they really target that one area right where the tumor was.
Right.
Whereas the rest of the treatment is like the whole breast. They want all the breast tissue radiated.
Right. So I feel the only thing I want to make about radiation for understanding is, you know, a lot of attention's gone to chemo. And we all have heard something about that. I, too, knew nothing. It wasn't in my family.
Right.
So,
I think also the side effects from the chemo are more obvious.
Yes.
So people see you.
And
they know that
them.
You're...
Right. And there's more of them.
Right. But they can see that you're losing your hair. And that maybe you look a little green.
Exactly right.
So whereas radiation doesn't always have
visible... It's not. Even when you're tired, People can't see that, you know.
Right.
So the main thing is the skin burning and the... Which is, again, you if you're diligent with cream that they give you and all that, it works through, and I'm 2 weeks out, and it's getting much, much better.
Right. And like the chemo, it's cumulative, so some of the side effects come after you've already finished the treatments.
Right.
But it gets worse before it gets better because it lags behind.
Right. So I had 6 weeks, the fatigue came in around 3 weeks, but I had 2 weeks after that.
And just to quickly explain to somebody, when you say fatigue... You know,
yes,
as if you had mono or,
I did have mono. That is kind of but you know, I was surprised for me, it wasn't as bodily, although, you know, I didn't want to get up and do much. Like, you know, I could get one thing done and then that would be good.
Right.
You know, just give small goals. But for me, I get tired and I still do right around my eyes and
like
my head.
Kind of like, eyes, you
like,
mean, or just
it feels.
Like you just don't want to think anymore.
The best, yes. Like I wouldn't want to handle anything large, but the best way, at its worst, I could explain it is when you were a kid, and this is a lovely analogy, but
I don't even know what you're going to say, but okay, let's go.
When you were a kid on the beach all day, playing on the beach all day, and you might have been in the sun a little too long, you know,
and you're just exhausted.
You were fighting that nap. You didn't want to take that nap, you know, after. It was just like that for me.
Or like when you ski all day, because I've done that more recently, where, you know, you come in and
the sun on your face all day.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with you, but you're just kind of like, I don't even care if I have dinner. I'm just going to take a nap.
Yeah, right. So it's beyond...
If you sit in a hot tub, forget it. It's all over.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's true. So
okay, so that was so that's the kind of fatigue you're talking about that kicked in about 3 weeks in, and I imagine lasted beyond the end of your treatment.
Yes, about 2 weeks, just a few days ago, I stopped taking a nap and
So now in your case, so you did the 20 weeks of chemo. You had to, you had a little delay there because of the hematoma. So you did the lumpectomy, then you had the hematoma. You had to have a second surgery to have that out. Then you did, what did you just tell me, 30?
Yeah, days. Or
days of radiation. Yeah,
Monday through Friday.
Monday through Friday, every day.
Yep.
Probably same time, same place, same bat channel.
Yep.
And was that pretty, I'll say, painless. You said skin issues, but those go away.
Yeah, and I think it was more emotional, you know, in a way, in that you felt more on your own. I mean, the techs were lovely and very supportive, but you didn't get that rapport like you did with the nurse at the chemo. You know, I saw the same nurse. You didn't necessarily have to do that, but you were, I was sitting there for 3 hours.
Oh,
I was sitting there for two hours.
So you have somebody who's there talking to you.
Right. Yeah, you get to know that person, and they're supporting you in many, many ways. This is the radiation, and you're in and out.
Right.
So it was a little bit more
impersonal. So you see them, but it's like, hi, bye.
Yeah.
Off you go.
Yeah, yeah,
right.
Yep.
Okay. So all of this obviously takes a toll on you physically. I imagine that there are many other stressors that come with this kind of treatment. Everybody, I think, knows that cancer treatments are crazy expensive. Even if you have insurance, I imagine it still costs you thousands of dollars out of your own pocket. That you probably were not planning to spend. Could you have been going to work all this time?
Yes. So, No. I mean, I should have been, but I thought about that. And, you know, going back, except for the waiting periods in between where I was recovering for the next procedure.
Right.
I would say 90% of the time for me personally, there's no way I could have worked.
So you would have been out of work basically for a year, almost.
Yeah, I'm on 10 months, so at least...
as if cancer treatments aren't expensive enough, and now you have no income.
And I always said, I don't know how people do it. And my heart goes out to you, my prayers go out to you. I don't know how people do it when they have to do it.
Like when they have to
go to
work.
Yes, because I'm a secondary breadwinner, not the primary.
Right.
So, you know, single parents, you know, on and on and on. Retired people, we've, you know, talked about it. It's overwhelming.
Well, I think two things. One is if you're the breadwinner, you do what you have to do.
Right.
So other things maybe don't get done.
Right.
Because you have to go to work.
Right.
Because you need to have that income. The other thing is if you really, like, flat out, you're in bed, kind of like you cannot work, at some point, you then qualify for disability. And if you qualify for disability, not only do you get a stipend from the state, but now you also are eligible for Husky, at least in Connecticut. I can't speak for other states, but, you know, you would be eligible for Husky, which would pay your medical bills pretty much 100%. You get the stipend, and a lot of providers also, if you're, you know, below a certain income level, which if you're not working, you are, then sometimes they offer some of the medical treatments for free also, which, you know, it's awful that that's the point somebody would have to get to.
Right.
You know, or to think that they'd be better off if they stopped working so they would qualify for all these things. And getting disability, I mean, I have some friends who've had things happen where they had to get disability. It's not a slam dunk. You know, like you have to have several doctors have to say, yes, you know, this person has a condition or is being treated or something. They cannot work. There's no way. Sometimes you have to apply more than once. So, you know, in the interim, while you're busy trying to do all these treatments, if you're trying to get disability from the state and you're dealing with government red tape and doctors and bills and insurance and, you know, that aspect almost sounds more stressful than the treatment. You know, they tell you what you're going to do. Right. You know, you're going to have side effects and you kind of plod through it.
Yeah.
But the other ones, it just keeps coming at you from all angles.
And not to mention your own emotions. I mean, you know, your own emotions.
There's no time for that.
I mean, you know, that you have to give yourself space and time for and allow yourself to
grow. Like the emotional reaction
to
each thing.
Absolutely. And we're all different and it may come at different times and maybe, you know, you want to talk about it and another person wouldn't want to talk about it. It's very different. But I do
also, again, if you're the single parent or something, you're not going to like talk to your 10-year-old child how upset you are about something.
Right. Which is one thing that leads into a tip that I'd like to say is it doesn't matter if it's one person or a group, but I advise if you could find someone You know, if a friend says that they want to help, ask them if they would be your vent, somebody you could vent to.
Can I call and vent on you?
Yes, and I really mean yeah. that. Mine was my son going through the Army. We had very similar path through a difficult emotional and physical.
Oh, I see what you mean, right. So
yes,
you were sharing
at the same time.
So
we were pumping each other up, you
yes.
know. And I needed him more than he needed me, it seemed. But if he could do it, you know, if he could do that, I put my mind to doing what I had to
right.
do. That's what I mean, just to
have, and I
have a
done-
cheer.
Yeah, I have
partner.
Done similar things like that with a friend, like where we're both dealing with something.
Yes.
And, you know, so he'll call sometimes and like, do you have a minute?
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, I only have 10,
it depends.
Like, go.
Yeah.
You know, because I can tell, like, he just needs to, like, get it
absolutely.
Out.
Absolutely.
You know?
And the groups, too, they work for some people are different stages. And back to the financial, I also wanted to mention that I know in our case, in our hospital, and I know many others, there are funds available for those of us who are in between having to apply to be disabled or for disability, pardon me, or, you know, able to pay. There are funds, local funds.
Right. So for people who are making money, which may sound like decent money.
Well, like in my case, yeah. we lost my salary.
Right.
You know, so there are patient navigators, they're called at Yale, and I think that term is pretty
I think that's
common.
Standard. Yeah.
And they can request these funds. We can't as individual
right.
patients.
Because
I did some research
with the
myself.
Doctor's office.
Right. And they also verify that, yes, she's a patient. Yes, she's... And they request it for you. So it couldn't be easier. It couldn't be easier. Just usually the patient advocates meet you. If they don't, reach out to them. They can do some help for you to get some of those funds available.
That's important
to
advice to, because I think sometimes people feel like, well, I have an income, you know, I'm not destitute,
right.
so those aren't for me. And you're saying, yes, they are.
Yeah.
And so just say, hey, I want to know what's available to me. And here at WICC, we are very involved with St. Vincent's Medical
mm-hmm.
Center, and there's SWIM
mm-hmm.
across the Sound and the SWIM program in general, which raises money and is one of the groups that
That's
does
exactly
give money
right.
to patients who need it.
Mm-hmm.
So listeners here should be familiar with that. We're going to take another quick break. We'll come back and wrap up with Elizabeth and some more advice if she may have that for anyone here on WICC 600. Ann Carrick here for Lisa Wexler. She has the day off. We're talking to Elizabeth, who has finished up her cancer treatment for triple negative breast cancer, which only about 15% of the population get diagnosed with. That was terrible English with. Anyway, we've been talking about some of the finances and insurance and the stress. You know, in this situation, you're absolutely going to max out all of your out-of-pocket. So whatever your insurance plan is, if you look, there's a medical, a hospital, out-of-network deductible, and then medical, hospital, network, out-of-pocket. And then there's a comprehensive out-of-pocket, which is, you know, that's it. Once you hit that number, which mm-hmm. is usually in the range of like $8,000, but then you're done. There's no
right.
more co-pays. There's no more co-insurance. Whereas the deductibles and the individual out-of-pockets for the medical and hospital, you're still paying the co-pays, like the $25,
right.
$50, whatever your plan has. So that's something worth mentioning. Now, you don't have to have any kind of plastic surgery, reconstruction.
I don't.
You don't.
I avoided that.
Yeah, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you did, or anybody who did, you
mm-hmm.
could potentially hit these out-of-pockets more than 1 year in a row.
Mm-hmm.
Which means you could be spending between premiums, deductibles, and out-of-pockets. You could be up near $15,000, $20,000 a year. Just
right
to continue having medical coverage.
Right, and that's because they space those procedures out.
Well, they have to.
Yeah.
They're not doing
right.
it on purpose.
Right.
Yeah. But you know, that actually is something worth mentioning, because in your case, it was very aggressive. They wanted to get to it immediately.
Right.
But some of the stage zero, the DCIS, LCIS, what's the other one, ADH, I think, those are not as aggressive, so people have a little time to think and figure out what they want to do. And the reason I'm saying that is you were diagnosed at the end of November.
Mm-hmm.
If you had had one of those, and
right.
you might have said, you know what, I'm just going to wait till January and then try to get all of the expenses in 1 year. So I max out my out-of-pocket one time
right.
and I'm done.
Right.
You couldn't do that. But I'm just mentioning that because that's something to think about if somebody has a diagnosis and they say, you know, look, if you wait a month, it's not going to matter.
Right.
Depending what time of year it is.
Right.
The reverse of that, if you get diagnosed in January, Like, just
know,
get to
it's
it.
Awful to think
get to
of,
it and, like, you know, get it done because, right. you know, you're going to squeeze it all into the year as best you can rather than spread it over multiple years if you can help it.
Well, and even so, you're going back every 6 months. You're going to see radiation oncologist, your specialist, your oncologist every 6 months.
And those are usually
and
very expensive appointments.
And ultrasounds 6 months.
You're still going to be spending, you're still going to max out of pocket for at least medical and hospital probably. Well, maybe not comprehensive.
Right.
But the other two,
depending on the insurance, certainly. But you know, it's not over financially in 1 year,
right? No, that's the point. Is you know, mm-hmm. you can get a lot of it into 1 year potentially, but this is probably a 2 year from a financial standpoint and medical insurance and you know, out of pockets and deductibles and all that kind of stuff. It's probably a 2 year deal, which you know, this is a little pet peeve for me in Connecticut with the exchange. If somebody has a lower income, they qualify for tax credits. But if you lose your job, obviously your income drops, so you would get tax credits. So if you were buying an exchange policy, you could put the tax credit towards those premiums. But if you had great insurance, you lose your job because you can't work and you have COBRA,
mm-hmm.
my way of thinking, you should mm-hmm. be able to take those tax credits and just put it towards your COBRA mm-hmm. premiums so you can continue the same coverage and not have to change everything
right.
while you're in the middle of some kind of treatment.
Right.
That's Ann's pet peeve. That is, I'll have to talk to somebody at the Access Health, you know, CT about that, but I don't think they really want to answer that question. What other tips would you give to somebody? I mean, we've talked about a lot of things. What were the things that helped you the most or things you did that you, looking back, think, wow, if I did something else instead, that would have been made my life easier or made this whole thing easier.
Okay, well, one of the things that I'd like to also give to people is the information about integrative medicine, which is also available at the hospitals. And that are things like free to you yoga, a massage usually for a small fee, acupuncture, knitting, are all kinds of art projects and things and just wonderful things that are free to you to do.
Right.
And not only do I think that's good for our minds and our bodies to get up and out for something other than chemo.
Right, something besides a medical appointment.
Right, yeah. But it's also another way to make that contact with that one person or
right.
a couple people without having to feel the pressure of a group if that's something that you're not
right.
comfortable with. And just some of the things are just so, there's diarying, where you can write, journaling. You know, so there are different things. You could choose what you wanted to do, but I highly recommend that. I also want to say there are so many silver linings along the way, and you don't even really have to look for them. You just have to be open for them and to be kind to yourself that, you know, the feelings that you have, feelings are yours. No one can take them away.
Right.
And just like other things that we face that are difficult, people might hit those feelings at different times or what have you. And I also want to
put
in...
And things will trigger feelings that,
oh, absolutely,
that don't seem like they should have.
But and that's okay.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's an extremely overwhelming... For me, I just wanted to get to it and do what I could do and have them fix me and move on.
Right.
But I think
one of the challenges is it's, you know, everybody probably feels that way, but what you may not realize up front from what we're talking about is that it's not a quick fix.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like,
right.
I think that would create a lot of stress too, that, you know, you want to just get this done
right.
and fix it, and it's not. It's this long, drawn out, like, as we've said, almost a year.
Right. Exactly. Yes. And I think accepting help and being kind to yourself, just it's an unusual, stressful situation. And you really, I am a mother of three. It's difficult to self-care, but
yes.
you must. You know how we've heard that over and over and over. But this is one of those times you really, really need to do that. And you also have to be cognizant of the people who care for you, I think. You know, my husband was integral in my care and taking me all the time, and my mother both. But he needed to step away from that. You know, he was not only caring for me and working, but also taking care of our son who's home when he needed to go places and I couldn't do it.
That's he's almost acting like the single parent and helping and your caregiver at the same time. And so, trying to go to work.
Yeah, so you have to encourage them to take their breaks. I did that. I ran into some people who they weren't thinking of that, and I kind of suggested to them that that's needed for them too, because it's just as difficult on them in a different way.
Right. And I've had friends who've gone to visit someone, like they would come to visit you for a week so that the spouse can have a week to just go do something else.
Right.
In other words, to give the spouse / caretaker a break,
even
because they needed it also.
An hour or two a day, you know, just to go work out or just to go get out of that house. And because it's, you know, sometimes it is depressing. Like I would feel like I was just not depressed, but just like this, I don't need him here. He's got to get out of here. I can do this on my own. This part I can do on my own.
Right,
he needs to go be him for a little bit, you know.
Sure. Yeah. Did you find it was helpful to be around other people who had been through something similar?
For me, it wasn't.
Whether it was not so much therapy, but just to be around people who understood.
Yes, yes, yes. And I think more towards radiation, where I felt I could bring something to the table, that I could be helpful or being open ear, that kind of thing. Chemo, I think it was more focused. But for me, I kind of had blinders on. I didn't really want to hear everybody else's experience. And this is why I'm saying be okay with wherever you are on that spectrum.
Okay. Well, Elizabeth, thank you so much. Obviously, there are plenty of resources out there for anyone who is being diagnosed or going through cancer treatments. I can't even begin to mention all of them. But thank you so much for sharing your personal story. I'm sure it's helping people who are listening. It is time for the news. When we come back, we're going to switch topics and talk more about finances right here on WICC 600.